Setting up shop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Setting Up Shop. This is possibly one of many podcasts all about taking your creative hobby through to a business and hopefully making it succeed. But we like to think it's the best one because it's ours. And where else are you going to find me, Dan, a apparently arrogant woodturner from the UK, and with my usual co-hosts, Heidi, a potter from America.
Hello.
And Erasmus, a Norwegian Viking, apparently, but also a blacksmith.
Apparently Viking? Why is that just apparent now?
Aren't you a little short to be a Viking?
Oh, fuck off.
Oh.
That's a stormtrooper joke from
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Having to explain jokes now.
Yes.
Mostly from our listeners who are necessarily
the American in the room.
Okay. I'll explain the reference to your TV show back for everyone else.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
So with that highly interrupted, almost two-thirds like introduction, we are going to cover today measures of success, or what does success look like? I was pondering this the other day, going through some plans for the future of my little biz, my little side hustle, whatever you want to call it. And a question was asked of me by my lovely wife, what does success look like for me? Which is not necessarily a question that you think about or get asked when you're desperately trying to create and find the products and, you know, all of the stuff we've covered already, like what's the market look like? Who are my customers? What's the market stall going to look like? Get all of that thing sort of organized and done. I think it's important, we all think it's important to consider what does feeling like you've achieved success or looking like you've achieved success actually, how does it manifest is probably a way of talking about it. So we're going to cover a variety of different little ways in here. And it should be noted right from the get-go that these are not goals. These are not something to necessarily write down, because when how you feel successful or how you've achieved success is going to be so individual. These are just trying to give you little nudges to consider that element of it so that you don't dive down a rabbit hole and just keep this momentum going and going and going, and you've reached all these different goals and you don't ever feel that kind of finished element of the thing, and you potentially burn out or get disheartened. That's the word. I'm chucking an extra in there. Disheartened. So yeah, really, it's a conversation around that sort of element of it. One of the most obvious ones would be financially, you know, financial success. And that could manifest in a couple of different ways. That could be, hey, you're able to pay yourself a regular wage. If you manage to do that in your crafting business, then fantastic. You've found the golden bullet. You're able to pay yourself a regular wage that is comparable to or better than a wage that you would get just from doing it in a normal, regular, day-to-day, grey, boring job. Or it might be that the financial success is... it's just enough, you know, it's just enough to ease the burden of anything else in your family, or you're able to maybe take a nicer holiday each year or something like that. It could be all manner of things related to that. We're going to discuss all kinds of different things on there, as I've said. And one of the things on there that I want to look at is, well, perhaps I should ask it in a different way. Rasmus, since we've only just started discussing this topic and you looked beforehand like you'd never even considered this question, do you have an idea of what you would class as what your vision would be of you saying, I'm successful? And, you know, again, it's not a goal. It's a when you have what you have reached, when you define yourself as being successful.
Well, yes and no. By some measures, I am already successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like people in the Norwegian blacksmithing community have looked at me and said, like, it's amazing the things you've been able to do and that you keep being able to do things like it. And I am just there staring at them dumbfounded and have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, it's the combination of the ADHD and being single. I think it's the it's kind of all fused into the one kind of...
I mean...
And I mean that in an entirely loving way before
I know, any I know. Form of
negative feedback from people there.
Yes, there are measures to success that I still haven't achieved, to put it that way.
Okay, well, give us one of those.
Like, I'm not able to buy my own property yet.
House or forge?
Well, yes. The answer is yes. I mean, the dream is find a farmstead of some sort and have like both a house and a forge on the same property. Mm-hmm. Not because I hate driving to work, even though I think it's kind of silly, but because I want that amount of stability where I know that, no, all of this is mine. I'm not paying rent to anybody. No one can pull the rug out from under me.
Yeah.
And I really like that idea of having the space to build this up to be the thing I want without being stopped by the fact that it's a rental property.
Yeah.
So okay. That's like more of an, I dare to say like an end game goal in all of this, but it's like, it's just another step. And then as soon as I get close to that, I'll imagine something else that's further down the line.
But that's fine, because I think the point we were trying to get to was that a measure of success doesn't mean that everything stops. It can do, but yeah. it doesn't mean that I'm now successful, therefore I must stop doing the thing. It's a case of, and I can understand that it sounds like you're after stability and removing a level of potential anxiety, and you've got the freedom as well. It's your space, so therefore you can do what you like with that space.
Yeah.
You're not restricted in those kind of elements. You can have your entire anvil farm and spread them out throughout the fields and milk them regularly.
Yeah, I mean, they hatch every 18 months.
18 months?
Yeah, especially for the big ones, it takes a while.
That's a long gestation.
Yeah. Tell me about it. But it's like having the property, though, that's the result of the success. Like before that, I need to have, and it's also sort of a symptom of having the financial stability of being able to pay myself enough of a regular wage for long enough so that the bank actually trusts me enough to actually give me money so I can buy a place. Like it's this whole circular thing of like, I need to make money, but that money, I don't really care about. I just want a place to sleep and a place for my anvils. Like you said, it sounds stupid that way, but that's kind of how it is. That's kind of how it feels.
I think it's having a financial goal is quite a common one. And I think the point would be that it's not, I want to make a million, whatever the currency is of your country. And that might be like, your measure of success. But if you do have that, that's fine. But I think an awful lot of us, myself included, would like to get to a point exactly as you said, Raz. It's not about, I want to earn X amount of money. It's, I want to earn enough money that the bills are covered and I'm not worrying about the next month's money.
Exactly that.
Like you've got enough orders going out or things coming in, and like all of your other little elements of it are happening, all your revenue streams are paying off enough, like at the minimum level, that you know your bills are covered and you're able to be comfortable. And then after that, everything's just kind of being able to actually take a holiday or whatever the case may be. Heidi, do you have an answer to the same question? Would you be able to define what your idea of a success would be like for yourself?
Well, obviously, financial success is probably like the biggest thing driving a capitalist society. But for me personally, I measure success a little bit differently. And maybe this is because I have a full-time job and I've built a pretty strong career and I'm pretty well known in my facet of business when it comes to my day job. But for me, in my makery business of being a potter, my measures of success really is about the community that I have around me. Am I a go-to resource for people when it comes to my specialty? Am I, in the top 10 of when someone asks, hey, are there any Pittsburgh potters or are there any potters in Western Pennsylvania? In my local community, I'm probably in that, short list. But I feel like there's like phases to that. Like as you start having more and more outreach, to me, that notoriety and that go-to spot is a really great opportunity to say, like, I am successful because I'm known for my work. I'm known for my ethics, or I'm known for like how quickly I can offer things to people and get, product in hand. We were just going through this exercise in my day job too, to kind of talk through the maxims of business. So like your motto as a company and then like the things that you build in to achieve that motto, like those tiers of communication, whether that's like, oh, we're good people, or, you know, we're trustworthy, or we're whatever. I would say like one of my biggest maxims is I want to be that trusted source for pottery knowledge and also a trusted source for product when it comes to like my clientele. So I think like it's probably different for makers because we put our souls and our hearts into our finished good, probably more than most businesses. So that ethos of like, am I enriching my craft? Am I paying it forward for the things that other people have kind of brought me along in my craft? Like, to me, financial is great, but for me, the biggest form of success in my head is the communal success.
Yeah, that definitely resonates with me. It's when I was at Kiel Camp this year, actually, I was having a conversation with Neil from NMB Woodworks. Just trying to remember how to properly pronounce his name despite the spelling. He's a Scottish wood turner by night, but by day he is a variety of different things in his day job, and one of them is a terminology has completely gone from my head now. That's really helpful, isn't it? Person project who plans manager? Things at, so project manager. That's the one. Exactly that. Yes. All right, Heidi. Yeah. and so he was asking some of the sort of the project manager type questions about things with the business and everything else. And I kind of had that realization that one of my measures of success is very similar to that. In for whatever reason, I like to be one of the people thought of when someone is like, I'm trying to problem solve something in this specific craft or genre. And that, yeah, I'd like to be in the top five, top 10 of people that someone feels that they can go to. And that, you know, if I've got an answer, I'll be able to offer it to them, or at least recommend someone else they can speak to about it, which is, it's not the entirety of the measure of success. It's a portion of what I'd like. But I think that for me, it ties in with the level of that I have, you know, I've put the hours in and people can see from the craftsmanship of the pieces I make and how often they're made and the quality and everything else that they trust that I would be able to give an answer that is truthful and also accessible to them, and that I'm not aloof or too artistic, shall we say. Some artists can be a little bit kind of us and them. Not many, but it can sometimes happen. And I would like to think, despite the gruff exterior, that I can be quite approachable and hopefully help people work through some problems with their craft. If they want help working through other problems, then they should go to our sponsor, BetterHelp. No, we don't have
that. I'm just very smooth, though.
Well, yeah, but seriously, if you have problems like that and, you know, and you're able to seek therapy, it's always worth it. If not, then that's why you have a craft friendship circle, and you should form one and be able to talk to one another, sat around fires and having maybe a small beverage or two. It can be very, very therapeutic. It doesn't have to be in Germany, but that does help occasionally. Now that we've done that sidebar away from the topic led by my own volition, measures of success, as we said, it doesn't have to be that kind of capitalist endeavor. It can very much just be finding an element where you're still sticking to your core values. So I was speaking to someone about this during the week while I was having a think about it, and they are very much a creative person, but they find it very difficult to stick to one thing. But they've built up quite a successful business making their current one thing. And I said to them about it and about, you know, how would you measure success? And they said, oh, it's really simple. In about another 6 months, I plan on selling my business. And I sort of was really confused because they, you know, they've been a customer of mine and become a friend type thing. They've been doing this for 3 or 4 years. And I said, but isn't this what you really enjoy? And they were like, oh, no, I did for like the first 2 years. Then I realized that whilst I had got to the point where I was good enough at it, I enjoyed it, I could make money at it, that you could already start to feel I was getting distracted. I was going, oh, what's that over there? That looks interesting. And so it could still be something within the same medium. So whether it's wood or whatever, but they knew that they weren't going to stay fully focused on the business in front of them. So they realized, well, if I build it up to X amount of revenue per year or whatever to be attractive to someone, they can then sell the business for X amount of money. that will allow them to invest in something else or to be able to not do anything as a day job for 6 months or a year, which allows them to then have freedom of creativity to explore this other avenue and then potentially make that the next revenue thing. And apparently this is something that they've done two or three times. So they recognize within themselves that level of, there's a lot of passion and creativity at the beginning of the project, and it grows in scope. And this is probably sounding familiar to a lot of us in creativity.
Oh yeah.
But they've taken it to a point where it's profitable for them to then sell on a business. And that was a whole other measure of success that I hadn't even considered at the time of just, and it wasn't success in the sense of getting the business to a point where it could be sold, but a successful measure was recognizing, oh, I'm going to be done with this within the next year or two. And I've got the understanding and knowledge to make this whole thing sellable so that I have the freedom to then keep creating, keep exploring the things that I want to do, which I thought was, again, as I said at the beginning, everyone's going to be unique. Everyone's going to be different. Not every measure is going to be the same. What do we think about measures of success when it comes to, I've put down here aesthetic image, because I know if we take the complete opposite end of the sphere from ourselves, but someone like, we think of like Wolf of Wall Street type, where their level of measure of success is, you know, the flash car, the really high-end suits, the flash watch, partner on both arms, all of that kind of stuff. What do you guys think that a measure of success for a creative person would be in that regard? You know, you've made enough money, so you're going to buy the shiny thing. Because I think, again, that will be independent, individual to every person. But I get a feeling that in a lot of creative people, it's not going to be the really nice car or a flash watch or a really nice suit.
I know the right answer.
Okay.
A workshop that is always bigger.
Okay, so we're not sticking to the realms of reality then.
Oh, sorry. Are we in reality?
Well, that's a debatable topic for a whole other podcast.
I mean, I feel like I kind of got a bit there with buying that power hammer last year. Okay. That was like the one big tool that I've been wanting for a really long time, and that has helped me tremendous amount in the business to make stuff quicker and better and make more money.
See, this is exactly the sort of answer that I wanted to hear, because so your measure of success was being able to afford to buy a bigger tool that allowed you to then make more things more efficiently or bigger things.
Yep.
Bearing in mind, listeners and viewers, those of you who don't know Rasmus that well, he sent me a Facebook link not so long ago to a foundry that used to make anvils that is for sale. Because buying them up secondhand isn't enough. He was kind of like, hey, do you know what? This actually might make more financial sense for me to own a foundry to make my own.
No, I never tried to pretend that would make financial sense. I said, this would be fun.
Yes, that's very true. You did say this would be fun. And that has to be said. That also has to be a measure of success in keeping things fun. And that's true. You have also said in the past about, you know, always making sure you have time to have playtime and fun. I'm not sure owning a foundry is the safest place to try and have playtime and keep things fun.
But, and that's why you hire people who know how to run a foundry.
Yeah, it doesn't sound fun.
No, you hire managers, you hire people to do all the boring stuff. Yeah. And then I can walk around being the rich, hopefully, idiot.
there's suddenly an HR department involved there, and pension payouts and insurance and like that. That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, okay.
But having your own foundry and a bunch of people who are like-minded and creating stuff, that sounds fun. But the owning a foundry, which you then rent and whatever, and that, yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
Mm, maybe.
But that's me. Again, it's unique. It's different. What about you, Heidi? Obviously, not a power hammer.
Not a power hammer. Well, I remember when I was first starting with the business, it was like, oh, you know, oh, it'd be really great to have a slab roller. And I had like this little tabletop slab roller, and I'm like, oh, this is the shit. And then as my orders got bigger, then I had to buy bigger equipment to be able to handle the amount of pieces that I needed to make in a shorter amount of time. So then I upgraded last year to the larger slab roller. And
for the benefit of listeners who don't know what a slab roller is.
Sure. So a slab in pottery is just a flat piece of clay that you can either use a rolling pin. It's kind of like when you're making sugar cookies. You can choose the thickness of the slab with the machine, either by using, for like the tabletop slab roller, I used shims. So they were like multiple boards that you put into the slab roller, and then you put the clay down as a blob, and then you roll it through the roller with canvas. And you can adjust the thickness by removing shims or adding shims to get it thinner. So then I upgraded to a larger slab roller, which is like a, it's funny, when I'm in my studio and it's behind me, it looks like a ship's wheel. It's a blue handled giant wheel that has two rolling heads that when you turn the wheel, it pulls the clay through and smushes it at the same time. And there's a turny part at the top that you can adjust the height of the clay. Now, the nice thing about that is that it stays consistent, because the shims over time, they will hold moisture and get thicker and thinner just because they're, I don't know, particle board or whatever you put in there. But this is like a big piece of equipment. And it was my, outside of my pottery wheel, it was the, and kiln, it was the first giant piece of equipment that was specifically only utilized for one step in the process. Nice. And when I was able to put the money towards that and pay that off very quickly, I was like, oh, it was a measurement of success, because I was able to see where, how the money was working, you know, that I wasn't just in debt because I bought this piece of equipment, but it also meant that I understood my process a lot more. So that also was a huge measure of success for me to be like, oh shit, I actually figured out how to make this work, make more money, and be less wear and tear on my body. So like those, I guess, more milestones of development, I think.
I think you hit on something there.
I thump on something.
That's the rule. You hit on something there with the realizing that you've gained a greater understanding of your business. That's a measure of success. You know, if you're suddenly able to, for instance, for me, this is unlikely to ever happen, for me to suddenly understand and care about tax and the way that figures need to be inputted for the government's level of data processing and all of that stuff, rather than paying someone else to do it. Like if I actually got to a point where I could do my own level of that kind of thing or whatever efficiently without worrying about it and go, oh yeah, that's just going to take X period of time. You book the time out, you do it, you've dealt with it and you move on. That would be like a measure of success in almost in maturity, you know, business maturity and kind of realizing certain things need to improve to get there. But like you're describing, being able to see, oh, I've bought X machine in order to improve the process, and then actually witnessing, oh, I've paid that off faster than I expected, because it genuinely has added that percentage. It's not just I want the shiny machine. It's like, no, this has been definitely the right choice.
Yeah.
So that must have been quite a warm, glowy, joyful feeling.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, I feel like I had the same experience when I bought my kiln brand new, because I was using hand-me-down kilns pretty much, like things that I found on Facebook Marketplace. And I think that might also be a measure of success, is it like not having to rely on used machines. Buying something that, you know, has a call center if something goes wrong with it. And Ashley still makes parts for it. you know, that to me is a place where I feel like as a result of my financial success, I've been able to have other successes. So it's like stacked success, where it's like, okay, this happened. Now this happened. Now this happened. Now this. I don't know if you guys are like this, but sometimes I'm so busy with the doing that I don't often, except for maybe Made for Makers, I don't often look back at where I was and see that, like really see where I came from and not just the slog of trying to keep it going, you know, like just thinking about like when I got my kiln, like, oh my God, that was such a great day when they delivered it and like when I got it installed and just like touching the buttons for the, like, I just like the sense of just immense joy of, wow, I did this. Like no one else was in there telling me what to do. I made the decision to do this and it actually worked. Holy shit. I thought I would just fail. I thought I would. And I get buyer's remorse a lot.
Okay.
A lot. To where if I'm shopping, I will go around the whole store, fill up my cart, and then walk around the store again and put everything back.
Okay.
Like I have a really hard time with that. I'm very risk averse, which is probably the reason I'm not full-time yet, is that I
don't know what you're talking about.
Right. I'm so risk averse. So when I have to make one of those really big investments and I follow through with it, it's like, oh, look at me overcoming this like giant fear obstacle. And when I can see that, like, maybe not in the first couple of weeks it paying off, but like in a couple of months, seeing that those decisions, like building the studio, buying the equipment, investing in the business, those are little tiny stories of success.
Yeah.
Whether that's a personal
hurdle
or not.
The one you missed out there was investing in yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. You're investing in the business and you're buying all these assets and everything else, but you're investing in yourself because you're recognizing, as you already said, hey, your body's taking a pounding from using these kind of like, you know, not inferior products, but products that are more hobby-esque kind of level.
Oh, and for sure.
You've reached that semi-pro level, so you need the semi-pro stuff. Okay, I work day-to-day in sales. Right, selling woodworking tools, equipment, and machinery. This week, I sold a brand new dust extractor to a 90-year-old man.
Wow.
Okay, and I felt bad doing it. I didn't want to sell it to him. I was like, are you sure you want this kind of thing? And his wife basically looked at me and said, look, he's been using the same extractor for the last 30 or 40 years. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not broken. But when the bag is full now, because it's a big industrial machine, between the two of them, it's too heavy for them to take the bag off the machine and move it without all of the dust coming straight out again.
Oh.
Mm.
So she wants him to be able to still go out there and safely enjoy his hobby whenever he wants to. So they bought a smaller, more efficient machine. It wasn't the cheapest, but it was the best for what they needed it to do.
Right.
And her, I don't think she was necessarily trying to reassure me, but it kind of did, because I, you know, it was that factor of I'm not being a horrible salesman, just trying to get as much money as possible out of this guy before he isn't able to do that anymore. It was helping him to keep going. It was helping him to keep enjoying the hobby that he's loved.
I don't know why I'm getting emotional.
You know, this whole thing. And it's obviously still in my head because this was only 2 days ago and I still feel a little bit weird about it. But at the same time, I was sort of thinking, because like he was stood in front of me and yeah, he had a stick, but like I would have put him like late 70s, early 80s,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't sound like a lot younger. But when you're in that age bracket, there can be a huge difference in health.
Yeah.
So he was still pretty active for a 90-year-old. I think a measure of success I'd like to say would be to, you know, recognizing when equipment is going to help you in the long term and being able to invest in it and accept that it's not a waste of money. It is an investment in yourself as well as in that stuff, because it's going to be better for your health. It's going to make things easier or more efficient and all that kind of thing. This is all just preliming excuses to my wife as to why I need to spend a lot more money on shinier machinery in the future.
I think we all understood that then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I've got to admit it to so myself Janie. As well. Exactly that. I'm pretty good. There's only one machine, other than a bigger lathe. There always wants to be a bigger lathe. But there is only one machine that I would like to upgrade in the workshop. And realistically, that would make things easier in the long term for stuff. But I don't have the right type of power going into that workshop I've got, so I can't fit it. The cost of getting that level of power fitted to my workshop is quite prohibitive, and I don't physically have the space for that kind of a machine. So I'm deliberately being practical about it and saving up money in order to rent a much bigger workshop so that I can fill it full of much bigger things unnecessarily, because I'm not currently doing this full time.
I mean, you are admitting you're working up to it, and I like that.
Well, you know, sometimes you have to admit to these things, and you know, it's a measure of success, Raz,
when you can
admit to yourself that all of this is really just a cycle to buy more and more shiny toys to play with, and occasionally have your friends come and hang out and enjoy them too.
Yeah,
safely, I hasten to add. It's a funny thing. I had had a friend come round to the workshop. Not Monday, just gone, but the week before. And he's a semi-retired military man, and he's been doing woodwork on and off for a number of years. And that's kind of his full retirement from the military plan is to go into woodworking. Chatted with him many times about it, and he's done a bit of wood turning, a bit of furniture making, all sorts of stuff. And he walked into my workshop, and he said something I hadn't ever really considered. And he said, Dan, he said, you've got to realize his words to me were, he says, I have a hobby shed. You have a workshop. And he said, I can walk in here and I can look and I can see where the flow of prepping, shaping, manufacturing, finishing out the door is it's there. Like, you know, there's not quite enough room to have it fully laid out like that, but he can see where certain things are on wheels in order to allow that to change. He said, whereas he has a shed, it's got some machines in it and then there's stuff everywhere. Like, not that mine's neat and tidy, but he was able to kind of clearly see the difference and the kind of where the effort had been made to move all of the stuff out of the way that doesn't need to be there. You know, there's a separate room for the wood store so that I'm not just tripping over stuff all the time and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't something I'd ever considered, really, but it was really nice for him to say. I'm not necessarily sure I fully believe it myself, but it was very nice of him to say. And it was that kind of little, ooh, yes, I might be on the way. I might be moving along there. That's quite nice. So again, measure of success can be when other people start complimenting you and telling you that certain things are happening that you haven't realized yourself yet.
Yeah.
Another really obvious one is when a wholesale client has put in more than one repeat order with you.
Oh, that feels good, right? That feels really good. Because like sometimes when you drop it off, you're like, oh, I don't know. Maybe they'll come back, and then they come back and they want double the order, whatever. It's just like, oh, I did good.
Yeah. I delivered my third repeat or shipped my third repeat order end of last week, and it's been paid for. And I've already had a conversation with them because I said, look, if you're going to want more, I need a bit more of a heads up next time because I'm out of the size of timber you need. And they've already come back and said, look, everything you're doing is fantastic. Love it. And hopefully this is going to last through just possibly the middle of January. So if you like, start working towards that would be great. So he's already sort of, you know, it's not a case of, oh, well, we're done with this product or anything like that. So no, we love it. It really complements what we do. As discussed previously, Heidi, it's a lid for a pot.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really nice. It's that kind of, I mean, a lot of us creative people, myself in particular, I need the reassurance that I'm doing okay. You need the little pat on the head and that kind of like, no, you're doing good. It's okay. Calm down, buddy. You're all right. You know,
yeah.
Like you haven't magically overnight lost your touch and forgotten how to do all of your skill set.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest difference between, you know, selling someone else's widgets and doodads and selling your own is like your skill, your heart, your personality is all wrapped up in that. And some shops that are just used to ordering things on like Uline or something because they just need something for their business.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of heart and soul when you order from a website like that. And then when you order something that's custom made for your business from a small business owner that isn't just hiring it out to like the cheapest bidder to make it, I think that's where our podcast is different from a business standpoint is that we're more niche where we're talking about like all of those things that kind of roll up into a business that is from a creative standpoint. I think from back to the point of like being a serial entrepreneur where you're like starting a business, sell the business. In some ways you disconnect yourself from it a bit more because you're like, no, the end goal is to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas for us, we want to die in our workshops. Like we want to be so old that we can't even lift our arms.
Old. Yeah. Old, die old. In the
not workshop. Die because a slab roller fell on your head. But I just mean like, that's the place that we go to to find solace. Yeah, it's and that in and of itself is also a measurement of success. Is that you've built a space for yourself that is where you go to de-stress. Yeah. Whereas like other people, when they go to work, it's like what creates stress.
Yeah.
And that it's such a weird thing to talk through with other people that maybe you're, you know, they own a shoe store or something. Not that they aren't passionate about shoes, but maybe it's more stressful.
I can remember there's two things in here. One is I can remember a couple of years ago getting a very unexpected gift of some money from a relative, and my immediate thought being nothing to do with, oh, I could pay a bit more of the mortgage off the house, or oh, I could go on a nice holiday. It was, I wonder if I've got enough to buy a wood-burning stove from my workshop to keep it warm and a vacuum chuck to make things easier for me.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate enough that I had enough to do both of those things and still have some left over so that we could, you know, potentially go on a nice weekend breakaway or something like that. A practical person may have put 50% of that in some form of savings or you know, shares or something like that, and use the other bit for a little bit of enjoyment. But my immediate thought was literally, how do I upgrade things in my workshop to make it more comfortable and easier to follow a process through? And the secondary part of that, linking in what you just said, Heidi, about it being a place of solace. There's a guy I know who, I've never been to his workshop, but I've seen a lot of pictures and video of it, and I know him quite well. He's invited me several times. I've just never made the time to go see him because he's a bit further away. And some other wood-turning friends have gone there, and he's a wood carver and wood turner. And they said, his workshop is insane. I said, what do you mean? He said, he has a section at the end of the workshop that isn't closed off, where he has a fireplace with two wingback leather chairs and a library around the fireplace. So he's basically got like that it's kind of Victorian Gothic lodge look at the end of his work. His workshop's big enough that he can have his kind of meditation space for when he's considering a project or whatever.
Oh, I love it.
And it's far enough away that it doesn't get dusty or chips on it. You know, it's like it's still in that space. You can still smell the finish and the wood and all the rest of that. But he can literally just go and sit next to this log burning stove that's in his workshop with the bookshop. And it may be that was partially influenced me having, you know, I've got a small library of reference books in my workshop. I've got a place to sit. I've got the wood burning stove and all of that kind of stuff. And that has to be a measure of success as well, where you can afford to spend some of the space, the hard earned space of your workshop, in a relaxation section, if you can call it that, you know, a tiny corner somewhere or whatever that may be. No, there's very little that's soft in Rasmus's workshop. I can attest to that. It's not somewhere you can easily just sit down without sitting down cautiously on things that may be sharp or spiky or hot. Or, whatever.
Sit on the coal buckets.
Yeah,
something like
that.
I mean,
that's not to say it's not an enjoyable space. Don't get me wrong, Raz. But it's not somewhere I would sit and go, I'm just going to read a part of a book for a while. You know, it's not that kind of a location. But that's not what it's meant to be. So that's fine. No.
I mean, I have chairs that we pull out and have lunch around the welding table, but
as we toast our sandwiches,
make pizza on the gas forge. You know, the usual blacksmithy stuff.
Yeah.
The one chair that I use all the time, it's a workshop chair. It doesn't have a back on it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of because this is, quote unquote, not really the space I go to just sit and be.
Yeah.
I go here to get shit done.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I find that very relaxing.
Yeah. I think on that note, then really the, again, I keep coming back to this, the measure of success is so individual to everyone, but contentment has to be in there somewhere.
I think you need to elaborate on that.
Yeah. So what I mean by that is that this is something that I was talking about with my wife, and I didn't use that word contentment, and she didn't necessarily understand what I meant by my measure of success. So my measure of success was that I would be able to keep the business within the 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. So I would be able to walk into work on a Monday morning at 9 o'clock. I'd be able to do admin, producing stock, turning, whatever the day required, and then at 5 o'clock I'll be able to lock that door and go home and not stress or be anxious about anything to do with the job that evening and be able to be present with my wife, or, you know, we can, whatever it is we want to do, maybe I'll go to the gym, maybe actually take up a hobby because that's the full-time job now and something else. Maybe learn the guitar I've owned since I was 10 years old. You know, it's only been sat in the corner for 30 years. You know, allowing your brain to think of something else. And whilst you might, don't get me wrong, you might kind of go, ooh, I've just had a creative idea for another thing. And you might sort of go on a rabbit hole of researching it or whatever. But it's not the same as, oh, I've got to now go do emails. Oh, I've now got to reconcile some bills. Oh, I've now got to contact a customer. Oh, I've now got to, you know, you're not churning through the stuff that should be the day job in your evenings or at your weekends. Now, I'm willing to state the fact that I'm not expecting that to be week one, year one of a business.
I mean, I'm 10 years in and that still sounds like a fantasy world.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying it would be a measure of success to me and contentment to me, in that I wouldn't be having enough work that your turnover is there, that the bills are paid, that you've still got to chase it. You've still got to have a little bit of that hunger there. You've still got to sort of chase it, but you haven't got to chase it so hard that you're having to do 12-hour days, 7 days a week and not talk to anyone and potentially, you know, ruin a relationship about it. That's what I'm talking about, is being able to keep things business and keep things outside of business separate enough that you can enjoy both. And it's not detrimental one to the other. But at the same time, you know, there's the freedom there. Like you had the other day, you know, hey, I want to have an open workshop Saturday or an open workshop weekend. Oh, what's the purpose of this? Oh, there's no real purpose. I just want to invite some people to come along, see the shop, see what I do, realize I exist. Maybe they'll buy some stuff. Maybe they'll book a course. Maybe they won't. It doesn't really matter. I'll just be in the shop. It's a play day. You know, I'm inviting people to come along and have a go or whatever the case may be.
I think you just redefined
retirement. Sort of that style. I know. Yeah.
That style of contentment and how that would work for me, because I struggle to imagine sort of not doing anything related to crafts or maybe metalworking in my spare time anyway.
Okay.
But having the business reach a point where I can start donating having free time that I can donate for other people's benefit, like making the workshop a more of a community space, or just building up a community around blacksmithing, giving other people's more of an opportunity to learn more and have more fun with this craft that I love so much.
Yeah.
In addition to that, of course, being able to also just disconnect from work a little bit, have like those sort of mini vacations in your own home where you are allowed to not think on it, because everything is good. Everything is all right. I don't need to chase anything right now. Everything is fine.
Yeah.
And currently that still feels very far off.
Yeah.
But I think like it will be something after I got in the property, probably, but that would be like that next step of now it feels like I've made it.
So I know we've spoken about this before with both of you. Can either of you legitimately say that you can sit and watch a movie or play a video game without feeling a little bit guilty about the way you're spending your time currently?
Very rarely.
Yeah, I think it depends on what's in queue. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
If in my case, if I've already been working 6 days out of the week, then yeah, that's fine. But if I have had like a mediocre day at work, or like I've been ill for a while and I just gotten back and now I'm going home and I was like, hey, shit, I need to get caught up on, but I don't feel like I have the energy for it. That's maybe when the guilt is a bit more present.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't go to the movie theater.
The great unwashed, or just because of the...
Well, mainly because I can't sit idle without being actively involved in entertainment if I am doing entertainment. So like Ben, my husband, makes fun of me because I can sit and I can play a video game for like however many hours, but I can't sit through a movie. And part of that is idle hands. Mm. Like if I'm sitting in a movie, I'm thinking about all the things that I need to be doing in my studio time. Yeah. I'm like reworking. Okay. Well, this is the sequence that I need to do this, and this is how many handles I need to make so that I can have some extra for this over here. And then I'm not even paying attention to the movie because the movie is not engaging me in that way. But with video games, like it's a lot different. But I would say from like a standpoint of success, like being able to, maybe that's going to be a success point, is that like, I will have it all figured out and done before I go to the movies so that I can just enjoy a damn movie without trying to replan the day that I just had. Like that makes no sense, but it's probably just more my wiring than a success or failure situation.
Quite possibly, because all of us, I think, are similar in that regard. But I just remembered, have either of you watched the TV series The Bear on Disney Plus?
No, not yet.
Okay, so I will pre-warn anyone who hasn't already seen this, okay? You need to stick with it, but anyone who gets stressed out by high anxiety situations, don't watch it.
Okay.
It is an attempt at depicting as close to real life as possible a dysfunctional working kitchen as much as possible. Okay, I'm not going to give anything away about plot point or anything like that, but in one of the seasons there is a character who is much respected, who has been a business owner for a large number of years, and they take the opportunity to retire, and it comes as quite a surprise to some of the other characters because the person's not old. You know, they're still in their prime. They're still at peak. Like they're still, every time someone talks about them, they are the standard to adhere to.
Hmm.
And there is a private conversation that gets had between two of the characters. And before that, one of the characters stands up and makes a speech and basically said, I've chosen to retire, and I know it shocked a lot of you, but I realized that food doesn't matter.
Oh.
And that was like their life. That was the whole thing. That was what everything's based around, was like the food doesn't matter, and that actually people matter, and that I've grown a huge amount of family of people around me, and that's lovely. But I've also realized that I don't get to spend any time with any of them. So I am making that decision. I'm making that choice. I'm stepping away so that I can now take the opportunity to spend as much time as I like with the people that I love, who I have, you know, this family of people that I've nurtured over the years that go all around the world. And I'm now in a position where I can visit them and I can spend some actual time with those people. And in a private conversation with one of the characters afterwards, they've said, I just want you to do me a really, really big favor. And they said, what's that? You know, anything for you? And they said, because the person is a chef, they've always been addressed as chef. They said, the next time you see me, could you just call me Gloria? Or whatever her actual name is. And they've literally like severed that entire portion of their life because they've taken the step back and they've realized, hey, do you know what? Not everything is about this one thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not at all suggesting that we all need to be kind of like that, but there should be that point where it's always good to sort of self-analyze and self-realize what you're doing is at the detriment of everything else, is it still worth it? But if you've built this beautiful community around you that we keep encouraging people to do, because we know how amazing it is, despite the fact you may or may not be an introvert, that it's important to then enjoy that community too.
Yeah.
And whether or not, and whether or not that is sort of having the open workshop, or you're going, hey, look, you know, Heidi, I've already said to you in the past, I'd love to come over and have a go on the wheel at some point, but I'm also really scared because I'm scared that I'll enjoy it and I want to ditch the lathe and I'll want to go into the pottery and then I want to do the whole thing. And, you know, but it's about that play. It's about that exploring avenues of things with the creative family of people around you.
Yeah.
And maybe that too is the measure of success of, and not wanting to upset anyone who finds it a struggle to make friends, but a measure of success can be, you know, how enriched your life is with the people around you who are creative, whether they're physically near you or virtually near you, you know. And that's something that hopefully all of you can resonate with or understand. Hey, I'm speaking here from the UK. I'm communicating with an American and a Norwegian, and all three of us understand this premise. All three of us can kind of say, like, you know, one of the measures of success is the fact that we are able to have an international family of people who are like-minded, regardless of whatever the craft is we're looking at. And that's my TED Talk for this week.
well done.
It's great.
But yeah, I think we should probably wrap that up there. Otherwise, I'm going to say something mundane or silly, and that's going to be the end.
Can I just give a reference point from what you were talking about? There's a really great episode of Diary of a CEO podcast. He does like video and regular podcasts, but he had Trevor Noah on, who's the South African comic that was on The Daily Show in the United States for a while. If you are feeling like you're at a point where you're just not really sure about these topics, like you're not really sure you're in a place where things are going well, or maybe you're not fitting in, or you're having a hard time establishing, like, are you at a stopping point? Is there something else that you could be doing? It's a really good podcast where he talks about like hitting the pinnacle of his craft with doing the work that he was doing, and then basically doing what that Gloria character did and stepping away in real life. Like he did it in real life. Yeah. He was like, you know, my family, my friends, traveling, all of this is more important to me than the slog and the glory of television, or, you know, whatever this thing is that I'm doing. And it's a really great episode and it ties really well into where we're leaving this off. So I just want to kind of put that out there. I know Rasmus has talked about that podcast before and it's really good.
I think specifically what he said in that episode about why he left The Daily Show was that he realized that all of his friends start a conversation with him, inviting him to stuff like, if you're not working. And when he realized that, it was like, oh shit, like I'm doing absolutely nothing except work. I'm always thinking about work. When I'm not working, I'm reading up on the news. And just to be prepared, just to be up to date for next week.
Yeah.
And constantly like living in that world of everything is about work. And then friends and family, like, were not even second tier, like third tier or something after that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's a very good measure as well of like, oh, yeah, now this is too much.
Yeah, it's become an obsession versus being a healthy business, a healthy experience. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, guys, as always. Thank you, everyone, for listening. So, realistically, what are we going to talk about now? We've got the usual things to say. Please, if you haven't already, make sure you recommend our podcast to as many of your friends and family as you can, whether or not you think they'll like it. You never know what people are going to enjoy listening to. And they don't have to start from episode one, season one. They could start from any episode you like, whatever you think is your favorite. On that note, it would be great if you could tell us which you think your favorite episode is. It might be this one. It might be a previous one. It might be one in the future and you're just coming back to it now and bothering to tell us now because you've been commuting the car and you've forgotten to deal with it and it's six episodes later. Who can say? But you can tell us that on our social media, Setting Up Shop. That is setting_up_shop, S-H-O-P-P-E, on Instagram and on Facebook as well. You can speak to us individually or you can speak to us via email, info@settingupshop.com. And individually, that is myself at Bevelwood UK, and that is Heidi at Whitehall Pottery, and that is Rasmus at Rasmus Lowen. Equally, we also do have a Patreon account, and we're very grateful to those of you who currently subscribe on there. And we are well aware that you're not getting anything extra for chucking a couple of pounds our way, or dollars, or whatever it is you're, you know, spending. A Krugerrand would be grateful every now and then. If anyone's got any spare ones of those lying around, we will gratefully take those off your hands. But any little does help and genuinely goes towards just paying for the annual fees of getting these episodes out. So if we're able to build that up, that would be great. And we keep talking about it and we keep promising it, but there will be merch and that will come out. And we hope all of you will be willing and able to purchase some of that and help get the name out and enjoy being comfortable whilst doing so. But that's it from all of us, and we look forward to you tuning in again at the next episode. Bye.
See you.